This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 109. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can phone us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Welcome along to the show. It's a post-World Cup hangover for us all, but we've got some exciting cricket coming up with the start of the county season and lots of international games still going on all over the world. But for me, the best part is that my cricket season is starting very shortly, so I'm dusting down the whites. I'm getting the cricket bat taped up. And I'm checking my gloves to make sure that everything is in good order. Are you looking forward to the summer, Berners?
Certainly am, mate. We've been bathed in some glorious pre-season weather here. And I will travel to Weybridge in Surrey on Saturday, like you, armed with a back cone, a new grip and some sandpaper. And I'll probably wish I wasn't there, but that's all good.
Well, if the sun shines, that's all that really matters. And with these pre-season games, they're normally quite short, aren't they? So I know you're a big fan of short games.
Well, did you see Shane Watson in the week? Bang, bang, crash, kapow.
Yeah, well, that was quite an impressive inning. So the first thing I thought of was, apart from well batted, son, was he must have been gutted that they weren't batting first, because he could have been on for the world record there, couldn't he?
Yeah, his wagon wheel was quite interesting. I watched the highlight reel and he literally hits everything in an arc around the onside, which I think we spoke a couple of podcasts ago about playing to your strengths and hitting in your zones, and that was evidence alone of him doing that. But yeah, some almighty blows. Jeez. I don't know how some of those Bangladeshi boys would have woken up in the morning. They'd have had a bit of a hangover, I know that. It was good to see that. Entertaining, I think, good off the back of the ICC's news to spoil everyone else's fun, that the big boys are still going out and having a good hit, because they've definitely put a dent in the so-called World Cup, with the exclusion of quite a few of the developing nations, notably Ireland. And
well, we're big fans of the Irish here on the podcast, what with following Ireland through the World Cup, through some of their highs and lows, and getting the inside track from our friend Pete Johnston. And it's a terrible state of affairs, really, when a side like Ireland, who are one of the 10 best one-day teams in the world,
yeah,
can't be allowed to play in the World Cup.
It's not a World Cup, is it? And also, the funny thing is Ireland are actually statistically placed higher than Zimbabwe, and could quite possibly be at that stage higher than Bangladesh and even, you know, even some other nations, possibly the West Indies, people like that, in 4 years' time. You never know, looking at the growth rate of Irish cricket and the way that they attacked that latest World Cup was... It's absolute craziness. And I know that the Dutch, after speaking with Richard Cox recently at the ICC conference there at Lourdes, again, he shows similar tales of woe and optimism going forward. You know, things like sponsors and player participation. What's it all for? What's the actual point in people starting to play cricket? Why would someone want to invest in it in their country? And, you know, what's the passion and the excitement for people involved if they don't have anything like that, a global competition to actually head towards? It's complete and utter nonsense. It's crazy. The ICC's gone mad.
The Irish game has been so enthused by the success of the team in the World Cup. I guarantee there's going to be more kids playing cricket in Ireland this summer than ever before. But after that, what's going to happen as kids realise that, you know, they enjoy playing, but at the end of it all, there really isn't any goal to it.
Well, yeah. To play a game in a country where the governing body of the sport that you're trying to play don't actually recognise your country as anything but a stocking filler. Oh, well, we might give you a go in 2019. All right. You know, thanks a lot.
It'll be too late by then, because all the best Irish players will have gone to England, won't they? They'll have thought themselves, well, I can't get into a World Cup. What's the point in playing for Ireland?
They'll be anywhere, because at the end of the day, it boils down to more than cricket then. It's a livelihood, it's a job. What are they going to do for the next 9 years? you know, the next 7-8 years, what are they actually going to do if they're not, if they've not got a sponsor that's going to pay their wages, if they've not got any ability to have some form of pipeline dream of making it in the game? They're going to jump ship, or they're just going to hang their boots up.
It's all very sad, but the good news is that the Irish aren't giving up. They're working hard to change things. They're trying to get more one-day international matches against the better teams. So, and that looks like that they're going to be able to do that over the next 4 years. They'll be playing more international matches against the other top 10 teams, which is a great news for them. So they're still working hard, and hopefully they'll get a first-class competition up and running sometime in the next 4 to 8 years, and maybe in the long run we'll see them as a test nation. But even in these dark times, you have to remain optimistic, don't you?
Absolutely, mate, absolutely.
Coming up on the show, by the way, we've got a couple of interviews. We're going to get into those in a moment. We've got Gary Palmer back. He's giving us some more valuable coaching information about batting. And we're also catching up with our adopted club for the summer, Watsonian, who have started their pre-season campaign on a stodgy Scottish wicket and a low-scoring game. But we'll let the club captain, Craig Wright, talk a little bit about that, his aims and hopes for the coming season, and also a personal invitation from Craig to come up and have a pint at the bar. I don't know about you, Berners, but that's the most appealing part of that interview coming up.
Only if it's tenants. Got to be a tenants when you cross the border.
And also, we've got your questions coming up in the questions section. And don't forget, you've got a chance to win an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. But for now, let's get on with the very first interview. It's time now on the show to head back to Scotland for our update with our adopted team, Watsonian. And it's getting exciting now because the Watsonian Cricket Club side in Edinburgh have started their pre-season matches. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, we're going to be following them throughout the summer. And this week we're talking to their captain, Craig Wright, who hopefully is going to be keeping us up to speed with all things happening on the field, the highs and hopefully not too many lows. Hi there, Craig.
Hi, David.
So, Craig, let's start by just for people who aren't familiar with your name, if you could tell us a little bit about your background in cricket.
Played for the Scottish national team for 12 years, retired a couple of seasons ago after the 2020 World Cup in England. Played quite a few games for Scotland, captained them for 5 years, and played for a couple of clubs up here in Scotland. Played for West of Scotland in Glasgow and the Greenock Cricket Club, and moved to Watsons last season, and lucky enough to be skippering them this year.
And because you're in charge, you've got high hopes. You finished second last year in the Scottish National Premier League. So what are you looking to achieve this year from a playing point of view?
Well, I think we showed as a club, we showed significant improvement last year in terms of finishing second. I think that was the by a distance the highest the club had finished in the national leagues. So I suppose the only place to go from second is first. So, you know, our target this year will certainly be to challenge for the Premier League title.
That must be quite a challenge for a team of essentially amateur players. What's the does that cause unique problems?
Well, I don't think so, because one of the things that attracted me to the club when I was moving clubs a couple of seasons ago was the ambition and, you know, the desire for this particular club, for Watsons, to improve. And there's a lot of young players with great potential at the club, and a lot of people behind the scenes. You've spoken to the president, who's got great ambitions and has done a great job over the last couple of years in terms of driving the club forward, off the field. There's certainly the potential there, and that was one of the things that attracted me to moving to the club a couple of seasons ago.
You started your pre-season campaign on Saturday with a win. From a preparation point of view, what did you want to try and get out of that game, and did you manage to do it?
Well, I think it was just really a case of getting back on the pitch.
Yeah.
The conditions weren't ideal. Obviously, the surface was pretty soft, but it was a beautiful day overhead. So, you know, we managed to get outside, and some of the bowlers got some miles in their legs, and the batters perhaps maybe didn't get quite as much out as the bowlers did with the surface conditions. But yeah, I mean, we were a bit rusty. I think the bowlers particularly were a bit rusty. But I think they'll have benefited from the overs that they got under their belt, and there's certainly one or two areas that we can pick up on and improve from Saturday. Our extras count was pretty high, shall we say, so that'll be one area that we're looking to improve on over the next couple of weeks in the pre-season games that we've got coming up.
Was that accuracy bowling wides, or are we talking about no balls?
Yeah, a bit of both, but mainly the radars were switched off. I think, but it's always the way. The first the first bowl outdoors in a match is always a difficult challenge for the seamers particularly. So I think, as I say, that they'll benefit from having those overs under their belt, and I'm sure we'll see an improvement when we get back on the pitch, hopefully weather permitting, this weekend.
So you blew away the cobwebs a little bit, and psychologically that's an important step, you know, getting back outdoors again and bowling and batting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you can practice as much indoors as you want, but it's not quite the same as being out on the grass. So, I think we were lucky to get some cricket in on Saturday. I don't think there was a lot of cricket played around the country, and hopefully we get some good weather over the next couple of weeks before the competition starts properly, to get some more good pre-season matches in, for the batters to get some time in the middle, and as I say, for the bowlers to get some more miles on their legs.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, going in cold is something that a lot of club players do, you know, in their first league game, and they kind of forget that, you know, if you do get in a couple of matches, then you can you can really blow away the cobwebs and get the feel for batting and bowling out in the middle. What's your plans for the season? What are your team strengths and weaknesses, and where do you think you're going to win games?
Well, I think we're in a fortunate position this year, particularly from where the club's come from over the last couple of years. I think we've got significantly more strength and depth than maybe the club's had before. I think probably we're going to be in a situation where we've got, maybe 15 or 16 players who arguably are good enough to be playing first 11 cricket, and I think that's maybe something that not a lot of clubs have. I think clubs tend to maybe have 5 or 6 genuine first team players, and then maybe a few filling up the numbers. But I think we're going to be in quite a fortunate position this year that we've maybe got a first team pool or a first team squad of 15 or 16 players, if you like. So that's a great start. We've got a pretty strong batting lineup, guys who really are looking to push their name forward for selection for the international team. I think we've got good strength and depth with the seam bowling as well. We unfortunately lost one of our main spinners, Ross Paxton, who moved down south last year to work in London. So we've been on the hunt over the winter for a replacement spinner. I think on paper we're reasonably strong, but it's the proof will be in the pudding, I suppose, once we get out and start playing some competitive games.
When you when the opposition arrive at the ground and they take a look at the team, what do they think? What would they say about the team? Would they say this is a good chasing side, or this is a side where they bat first and put a big score on? Where's your?
I think our home ground tends to be quite slow and low, so maybe isn't the easiest place to chase. So we would tend to bat first at home. Albeit we actually chased quite well a couple of times at home last year as well, but I think we've got reasonable strength and depth in both departments. I think maybe you would say on paper our batting slightly stronger than our bowling.
And of course, being an amateur side, the social part of the game is important as well. So what's the atmosphere like at the club socially? Would we be welcomed at the bar if we turned up?
I'm sure you would. Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's a fairly young dynamic to the club, so that's pretty good. And there's a few interesting characters, shall we say, around the place. They're a good bunch of lads, and we enjoy ourselves as well as trying to win games, and certainly the social aspect of cricket, as everyone knows, is very important, especially club cricket.
So we've got have we got anyone that we want to keep our eye on if we do turn up?
Yeah, probably a few. Probably a few. Mr. Ryan Flanagan would be one. You probably want to have a chat with him at some stage, and you might want to have your translators or some subtitles. I don't know if you can do subtitles on the internet or on the radio, but he's from the borders, and yeah, you might need some translator on hand if you're talking to him in the next couple of weeks. But he's a personality, shall we say, so he might be one you want to speak to.
Well, we'll keep a close eye on how the team's performance is, and hopefully we'll be checking back in with you over the course of the season to see how you feel about things as we go along.
No problem, David, anytime.
Craig, captain of Watsonian Cricket Club, thank you very much.
Cheers.
It's time now for the ever popular question section on the show, and one of the reasons why it's so popular, apart from us giving some extremely excellent advice, is that you get a chance to win a coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy with some really great names in cricket, like Ian Pont, who Bangladesh are obviously missing as their bowling coach, Gary Palmer, Derek Randall, Alvin Kalacharan, Andy Caddick and Mike Brearley. So Berners, who's got the first question this week?
We've got a question from Don here, and it's quite a simple question, but I think quite an important one. It's all about the grip, and he's asking, how does he avoid a choking grip when he's batting?
Well, that's an interesting question because, of course, the greatest batsman of all time, by some considerable margin, Don Bradman, had a choking grip. A choking grip, by the way, is the grip where you are holding the handle of the bat with your bottom hand. So if you're a right-handed batsman, that's your right hand completely with your palm on the handle. So it's like you're choking the handle of the bat with the grip. Instead of having what happens in the traditional coaching manual, you have a very loose bottom hand grip, and your top hand does all the control. So I think the first question is why, if the greatest batsman of all time had a choking grip, and there are some extremely good batsmen even to this day who use a choking grip, why don't we coach it? And the reason why we don't coach it is that if you get a young kid to hold a bat in that way, what he tends to do is bring his bottom hand in a little bit too early when he's trying to play a straight batted shot, and he ends up hitting across the line because he's using both hands, either using both hands together, which if he's right-handed, his right hand is stronger, so it comes through too quickly, his top elbow drops and he ends up hitting across it, or the bottom hand comes through even quicker than the top hand, that again the top elbow drops and you end up swinging across it and looking a little bit embarrassed with your middle stump bent back. We've all played a shot like that in our time, haven't we, Berners?
Absolutely. Just get back on, try and get underneath it and do whatever you can to clear the infield.
If you've got a very good eye, or you're playing on a pitch where you can trust the bounce and it's not turning much or moving in the air much or moving off the pitch much, maybe you'll get away with that kind of play. But if you're up against a decent bowler who can swing the ball or seam the ball or gives it a lot of turn, and you don't quite, your footwork maybe isn't quite good enough, and you don't quite get to the pitch of the ball, then you're going to be in trouble if you're playing with a choking grip. However, you can get away with it. It does work for some players. It worked for Don Bradman. He averaged 99.94, so he did okay. But it's not one of those things where if you've played in that way all the time, then you're probably better staying playing in that way and working within your limitation rather than trying to change it. By all means, have a little go at trying to change it. If you're 25 years old, you've always been holding the bat with a choking grip, I wouldn't bother trying to change it. All I would do is say, try and work within your limitation. Try and keep that top hand in control. Try and keep your elbow as high as you can, your top elbow as high as you can, and swing the bat in a straight line from your backswing through to the direction you want the ball to go. If you can do that, then you're going to be okay. If you're a bit younger or you think you might be able to get away from having a choking grip, it's quite simple. just grab the bat any time that you can. You don't have to be playing in nets or whatever. Just grab the bat any time you can, and play with your top hand only. Just swing the bat with your top hand only until you get the feel of controlling the bat only with your top hand. And then when you can do that, put your finger and thumb very, very lightly on the bottom of the handle of your bottom hand, on the bottom of the handle, and again, swing it again. Use control of the bat with the top hand and swing it in that way. You can, if you're at practice, you can get someone to throw you just little underarms with a tennis ball or a cricket ball, and you can try and hit the ball just with the top hand grip, and then gradually bring the bottom hand grip back in. Perhaps one way of progressing it is you play, say, 10 shots with the top hand grip only. Then you play a series of 5 or 6 shots where you play with the top hand grip, but at the top of your check drive, you just put your bottom hand back onto the bat just to give it a little bit of support, just with your finger and thumb to give it a little bit of support. Then swing the bat backwards with both hands on it, then let go and play another shot with one hand, put your hand back on at the top. And then the final thing is to put both hands together. So you're really getting that feel of using the top hand, but getting both hands working together. It takes a bit of work, might take a few sessions to get right, but if you really want to do it, then it is a good thing to do. What's the next question, Berners?
I've got a question here from Alex. He's a slow left armer, much like myself, and he's currently not getting much turn or flight, which is always very hard as a slow left-arm orthodox bowler. You're normally at the brunt of everyone's massive swings across the line, and he's just asking what he can do to try to get that back up and going again.
Well, this is a very common thing, especially in club cricket. You probably know yourself, Berners. There's a constant pressure as a spinner to not get hit into the cow patch. So you tend to get into the mentality of, rather than thinking, right, how am I going to take wickets? You tend to think, right, how am I going to stop this guy from heaving me to all four corners? Would that be right?
Absolutely. All about control, discipline.
It isn't. And there is a certain type of bowler who can have quite a lot of success by bowling or trying to bowl as many dot balls as possible. It's not the most glamorous way of bowling, but it can be quite effective, especially in the middle overs of a limited over match, where maybe you're not particularly trying to take a wicket, you're just trying to build a little bit of pressure.
Absolutely.
It's what a friend of Pitch Vision Academy and our leg spin bowling coach, Haroon Mohammed, calls the maiden mentality. You try and you sacrifice attacking cricket because of fear of getting hit by an aggressive batsman, which is perfectly understandable. But in order to be a spin bowler, an effective spin bowler, then you do want to get out of that mentality if you can, because you do want to be thinking not how can I stop going for runs, but how can I take wickets? And that perhaps is the leg spinner's philosophy more than any other type of spinner, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can't do it as a slow left armer or an off spinner. The key really for me is get to the net on your own with some balls, as I often say to a bowler, get to the nets on your own with some balls. Take your run up away, just stand in the crease in your normal pre-delivery side on position and start bowling from one step to a target, and then focus on giving the ball a rip, getting the ball to turn as much as you can, and get as many revolutions in the air as you can to try and get the ball to dip in its flight, because that's what we want as a spinner. We want dip and we want turn. Because if you can do those two things, then you will take wickets. But you need the confidence to be able to do that, because if you are giving the ball a rip, you also are going to bowl some bad balls until you get the hang of it. So that's why you really need to go back, take out the run-up, take out the batsman, take out the fielders, take out everything except you standing at one end and trying to bowl the ball into a target area. To do this, you probably want to bowl somewhere in the region of 8 to 10 overs a week on your own. You know, if you're bowling 10 overs a week, you'll soon get the hang of giving it a rip. You can carry on playing while you're doing it and carry on bowling with your normal style, but you will find that gradually you'll be getting more and more turn. And then bring your run-up back in and see how you get on with giving it some turn in practice with your run-up. What I would say is, when it comes to bowling in nets against batsmen, just don't. It's far better to never bother to turn up to your team practice and then go down the nets on your own on a different day and practice on your own than it is to turn up to team practice and watch some slogger try and smash you all over the place because he knows he can't get out because he's got his 10 minutes no matter what. That's no good for the batsman and it's no good for you. So don't bother. I mean, if you've got a coach, then, you know, maybe you can just go to one side with your coach and do some bowling. But I mean, it's certainly in the situation of a lot of players is you won't necessarily have a coach. Players will just turn up to practice and turn their arm over and batsmen will just slog. So just don't get involved in that. It's better just to not turn up at all than it is to get slogged. And remember that you're an attacking bowler. Even slow left arm bowlers are attacking bowlers. So go for it. Be an attacking bowler. It sounds like you want to be an attacking bowler. So it's a lot more fun being an attacking bowler than spearing it into someone's legs for 10 overs.
Yeah, absolutely. Try and turn one past the bat. Get him to leave his crease.
Yeah, exactly. Get him dancing. That's always fun as a wicketkeeper, to see someone hairing off down the track only to completely miss it when it turns. In this next portion of the show, we're going to be talking to Gary Palmer. Gary's CCM Academy is world-renowned for producing high-quality cricketers with excellent techniques. And Gary is also the batting coach of Pitch Vision Academy, our online coaching academy.
When coaches are running sessions, you've always got to remember that, especially with youngsters, maximum activity is paramount. You know, if you've got a two-hour session, you've got to try and get them to hit as many balls as you can. If it's a batting session, it's not just about hitting balls, it's about hitting balls correctly. And make sure the session is, you're really thinking about developing the players you're working with rather than trying out some new methods you've learned on a couple of courses that you may recently have been on. Don't lose sight of the fact that anytime you do a session, it's not for you as the coach to satisfy yourself and what you know and what you've practiced and what you've learned. It's all about developing the players. And try and go away from a session thinking, okay, if that was me as a young lad, what would I like about the session? And what would I dislike about the session? And, you know, we expect our players to be honest with themselves about their technique and how they're doing as cricketers. And I think as coaches, we have to be the same. We have to be honest about what we've done. So I'm very much like that. When I've done a session and I drive home in the car, I'm thinking to myself, have they really enjoyed that? Could I have done it better? Maybe I should have done the machines for a bit longer and the nets for slightly less time. It's good to be hard on yourself and try and think of how you can make every session as productive as you possibly can. Don't just go through the motions and think, okay, I'm going to deliver as many different things as I can week on, week off. You've got to deliver what you feel is the right thing to progress your players forward as quickly as possible and give them the honour with the tools that's going to make them a successful cricketer, not just go through an array of drills and practices for the sake of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do agree with you there. You see coaches doing things which look good but aren't necessarily doing the job.
Yeah. Rather do something for a long time than do lots of little things for 5 minutes. Because if you do something for a long time, you're going to perfect it quicker. Mm. But never lose sight of the basics. no matter what level of player's at, you've always got to be monitoring, number one, setup, and most importantly, backswing. I mean, my reference points in my head, okay, I've got my ABCs, but within that, I'm looking at setup and backswing, leaning in to step forward or to step back, contact with the ball, finish position. Those are the five things in that order. If the first three are right, then you might find something further on down the chain. But setup, leaning in, step forward, back, contact with ball, finish position. Oh, and also, when you're coaching, never forget that humour is a real big asset for a coach to have. It always cuts you a bit of slack, especially when you're meeting somebody new that you haven't met before and you're just about to coach them. It relaxes people, it relaxes groups, it gets people on side with you. So where possible, exercise some humour. Makes things far more fun.
That's the end of the show for this week. We've just got enough time to tell you a little bit about what you can win if you send in your question for our questions section. So before we do that, Bernard, what are the contact details for getting your questions in?
Give us a call on 020-88-167-691 or alternatively drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And we do want your questions because you can win a prize. You can win a coaching course online courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com/academy. And the questions that we're looking for particularly at the moment, although we'll accept any question from any area of cricket, fitness, nutrition, technique, anything like that. But the things we're looking for in particular at the moment are what kind of problems you have on the mental side of the game when you're batting. Are you worried about getting out and you completely just start blocking all the time because you're terrified of getting out, for example? Or do you get so nervous before you're waiting to bat that you get out early because you tense up? What psychological things are causing you a problem as a batsman? If you can send those in or any other question, but in particular the psychological things, you can send those in to our email address. You can get us on our Twitter, which is at PV Cricket Coach. Or you can phone in to our answer phone, which Berners gave you the number for earlier. So, Berners, who is the winner for this week's competition?
I'm going to stick to my own camp. Left arm over rules the roost, and Alex is this week's winner.
Excellent, Alex. And you might want to have a look at our spin bowling section to see if there's anything you like the look of in there. So we'll be back with more questions to answer next week, and until then, we'll see you next time.